Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer. SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting.
Than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience.
With Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Mike Sielski, Glenn Mack. Now, it is a rainy Saturday in the Delaware Valley. One of the great pleasures we get is when we get to talk to this man, the legend, the Skip, World Series champion, Charlie Manuel, is with us. Charlie, how are you this morning?
I'm doing good, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm Glenn, but we're both good.
We're both great, okay, Charlie.
Okay. Can't see you, man.
I know. I appreciate that.
I'm totally, yeah.
So Charlie is involved in a terrific charitable effort. Mike, why don't you set this up?
So Charlie is collaborating with Hog Island Press on a series of T-shirts called Charlie Knows Best. And what the T-shirts do are kind of highlight Charlie's love of and perspectives on hitting. There's five different kind of T-shirt concepts. And the cool part about this is that $5 from every purchase of one of these shirts benefits RIP Medical Debt, which is a nonprofit that works to strengthen communities by abolishing medical debt. And every $100 donated to RIP Medical Debt relieves $10,000 worth of someone's medical debt.
Wow.
And that's pretty amazing. And it's great that Charlie's involved with this. And it's great to have him on the show.
It is. And by the way, those T-shirts, Charlie's T-shirts, will be on sale available this coming Wednesday, 6:30 to 8:30 at Puddler's Kitchen and Tap in Bridgeport. It's the holiday sports gift extravaganza with all kinds of great stuff. Mike's going to be there. I'm going to be there. Ray's going to be there. Mike, why don't you lead off? Oh, by the way, let me just say this. I want to tell our listeners, because of the role that Charlie plays with the Phillies now, it would be improper for us to ask him questions about the roster and free agency and the like. So we're going to move in a different direction. All right, Mike, you go ahead.
Yeah, so Charlie, we're a bit removed, obviously, from the Phillies' run to the World Series. And I think it's safe to say that as talented as that team was, that run was surprising. And they were not the best team in the National League during the regular season. And then they got hot at the right time, similar to what happened in 2008 with your team. You've been involved in baseball for a long time. I'm curious your thoughts on that sort of thing happening more and more in baseball, the idea of the hot team getting to the World Series or even winning the World Series, as opposed to the quote-unquote best team during the regular season. You've seen both sides of it. Is there one that you like better? Is it better to have a team come out of nowhere, as seems to happen more often recently, or was it better back in the day when one team won the National League and one team won the American League and the best of the regular season faced each other?
Yeah, I think I think what the Phillies did was fantastic, and I understand exactly what happened for them. And I always felt like the Phillies, for the last 2 years they've tried a lot of players, I can't tell you all the players that they've tried, but all of a sudden, they make the managers change, and they start playing their younger players who had a lot of energy and they had a lot of life to them and things like that. We had these, and then we have all these veteran players over here who we signed, like our star superstar players and things, and they kind of mesh together good and they kind of grew together. And that's what actually when the season starts in spring training, and that's what baseball is all about, really. You want to come out of the spring training healthy, but also ready to play and feel like that you've and when I say ready to play, that means have you had enough at bats? Have your pitchers thrown enough innings and pitches and things like that? and are they healthy and whatever. And then, you know, when the season starts and you see and you start trying guys, and all of a sudden you kind of hit on a combination that you like, and the energy level jumps up. And I think it that's one of the things that Robbie Thompson did real good for our club when we put him in the manager's role. I think it the players, you know, like got more relaxed and everything, and they started having fun playing. And as the season went on, they kept improving. And at All-Star break, I think the moves that Dave Dabowski made, you know, like definitely played a part in us getting in, you know, like having the talent to stay there. And at the end, although in September, I've heard people say that, you know, like at, you know, like how good of baseball we were playing. Actually, before the playoffs started, I felt like the last couple of weeks, you know, like we were playing okay, but we weren't playing great baseball. But I looked up and seen who was in there, St. Louis and Atlanta, and the teams that were in there. And I thought to myself, yeah, as far as looking at them, what I knew, I felt like that we had a better team than St. Louis. And mm-hmm. I felt like we had a chance, definitely a chance to win. Then I looked at when we got to the Braves, and I looked at the Braves, and if you go back and look at their hitting and their pitching, and mostly, you know, like we were very, very close. Both teams are really close. I mean, they were in hitting in our league, and also I think in the major leagues, we were right back-to-back with each other. And I figured that was close. I think that they had a little bit more athleticism than we have. But at the same time, you know, I always felt like that we could win. And then when we got in, and then when I saw San Diego play, I felt like during a series that we definitely had a better team than San Diego. And then when we got to the World Series, I felt like the first three games that we were doing really good, and I was looking for that great pitching that I heard from Houston, and all of a sudden, you know, like after the guy threw
then it showed up, right?
Yeah, hey, exactly. All of a sudden, the guy threw the no-hitter, and all of a sudden, their bullpen showed up and their starters.
Yeah,
you know, like, proved to me what people were talking about. Really.
Hey,
and then had a big season, really. We know.
Yeah. Oh, it was great. So off of that, just a little bit, we talked about, you mentioned their pitching. Last year in Major League Baseball, batting average and OPS were like at all-time lows. Offense just kind of disappeared. We'll talk about rule changes maybe during this conversation, but how come nobody can hit anymore? Is it the all-or-nothing approach that batters are taking, or is it more in the quality of pitching these days? You get these monsters, these kids coming out of the bullpen throwing 99 miles an hour. Why is hitting?
Right.
I asked the hitting coach, the great hitting guru, why has hitting disappeared?
I think it, when I look at and I watch hitting nowadays, I think of everybody, almost every hitting coach in baseball and all the analytics people and everything like that, everybody has their own opinion about hitting, and everybody knows, thinks they are hitting coach and things like that. And when I watch a guy in the World Series throw the no-hitter, I can sit there and I can be talking with guys up there who's been around just as long as I have. And when somebody's throwing velocity and they're throwing a ball up and it's getting above the hands, you can strike the guy out. And every now and then a guy will hit a home run, and that even gets him in more trouble because he absolutely just got very lucky hitting that ball. And a good example of that, Glenn, and I won't get on it too much, but that Soto, the guy that plays for San Diego now, was in Washington 2 years ago on MLB. They flashed these numbers up and showed him taking 175 fastballs up above his hands, and of course he had great results.
Yeah.
Now, once that's what velocity's been. It's been that way forever and ever and ever since I've been in the game. Now you got to keep you got to hit straight through the high ball. You can't, and especially when it's high velocity, the pitcher will supply the power. All you got to do is stay strong in your legs and your approach, and be quick with your hands and let the barrel of the bat meet the ball and let the rest happen. And a good example is that. I forget that 1 year was in Cincinnati, and I think we swept them that year, and Hamels was pitching a shutout that night, and they bought Chapman in the game, and Hamels asked me, he said, how do I hit this guy? And I looked over at him, and I said, what do you mean how you hit him? I said, look, you just get kind of planted, stay stay a little strong in your legs, but nice and easy up, and just try to meet the baseball. Just let him supply the power. And Hamels drove the left fielder all the way back to the left center field fence, and he caught it right at the kind of at the top of the wall. And Hamels was more excited about hitting the ball like that than he was throwing the shutout.
So, Charlie, Charlie, just to kind of build on that, the rules are going to change next season. Shifting is going away. I've talked to people in Major League Baseball who mentioned that part of the reason that hitters swing for the fences is that, well, if I hit a line drive to right field, the shortstop or the second baseman is going to be standing out there in short right field and catch the ball, so I'm better off trying to hit the ball over his head and over the fence. Do you think that taking away the shift will, in time, change hitters' approaches at all, and we will see more balls put in play? We will see more doubles and triples. Is this going to help?
You know what? Going to help? It could. But at the same time, too, I look at it this way. I am if baseball wants to do away with the shift, that's okay with me. I mean, I'm all right with that in a way. But at the same time, those guys that are pulling those baseballs and things like that, they still going to be hitting them ground balls that they rolled over on and things like that. And they will set up a defense that can handle that. I've seen the Yankees. When I was over in Cleveland, have all these big hitting teams, and they used to wire us out first to third as far as fundamentally playing the game and hitting a hole over at first base. And then finally, when I became a manager in the major leagues, I started shifting. I just bought my second baseman over father toward the and actually was just making sure that we got one. And most of the time, we threw the second base, but at the same time, we even started still turning double plays. Mm-hmm. And things like that, and I think it's the philosophy of the game and how people want to play. And I think that when the balls that Ryan Howard used to pull a lot, and people would complain about them, they were sinking fastballs down and away or out away from him, and he rolled over on them, hit on top of them. And I think that the hitters trying to pull the baseball, they will always do that. I think that we're going to see. Now, I'm not saying that we could see a big difference. Especially on some guys that can really handle the bat, but as far as in general, I say if it helps hitters, that's fine. But I'm kind of leery to see how much it's going to help.
All right, Charlie Manuel is our guest.
Sense? It does.
Yeah,
Charlie.
That makes sense. Yeah, Charlie. I hope it's more than that. I really hope it has an impact because I miss doubles and triples and stolen bases and defense. I'm getting weary of game that's all strikeouts and walks and homers. So I hope it means more than that. Charlie Manuel's our guest. Not that I need to say that. I think people know it. Charlie, several guys who you managed during your time here are now on the Hall of Fame ballot. Last year's voting, Jimmy Rollins got just under 10%. Bobby Abreu got just under 9%. They're back on the ballot. Do they deserve more consideration? You know Abreu's impressive career stats, and obviously you know what Rollins meant to this team during its great years. Just ask you to observe on those two.
Yeah, I think we definitely they need more consideration. I think that when you look at who they are, I think we're starting to get away from the offensive Hall of Fame is what people talk about more in guys' career than how good the player actually really was. And I think when I think of Jimmy Rollins, I think of a guy that he was our cutoff guy. He's the guy that went out on both sides of the field, handled the cutoff throws because he had strong arm and accurate. He was very good at that. And no one ever used to talk about that. His range at shortstop was very good, and he could run the bases. And not only that, I know people would be kind of disheartened about some of the 3-1 fastballs that he flew hitting high in the air to center field and things like that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, too, when I think about him and you look at his what he accumulated as far as stats and stuff in the leadoff hole, I think he definitely goes there. I think Jimmy Rollins is a very talented guy and he had a great career. I think his career really gets overlooked sometimes. Chase Utley, I think if you grade him out over analytics grades him out, I think he's in. Because what they're big on, Utley's stats, definitely stands out in that. If I'm right, and you know, like,
yeah, he's on the ballot next year. Utley's on the ballot next year. Abreu is on the ballot this year. I know he was traded during your time here, but you managed him. Does he deserve more consideration?
Bobby Abreu, I think he should be. I think that they should take really interest in Bobby, because the way that they pick the Hall of Fame players nowadays, I think if Bobby Abreu, he stands out too. He had a big career and he was very consistent every year. And I think that he definitely but not only that, Glenn, Bobby Abreu was like, whether we want to say it or not, Bobby Abreu was better than an average outfielder, and he also had a strong arm, you know, and he was a good ball player. I mean, he was a star player in the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mike, you got one more?
Yeah, no, it's interesting, Charlie, hearing you talk about these players. Whenever I think of the Hall of Fame, I always see it as a debate sometimes between guys who had very long careers, who maybe accumulated a lot of stats, versus maybe a player who was, for a short period of time, one of the best, if not the best player in the game. And how do you weigh those two kind of ends of the same line, so to speak? You know, Don Mattingly was the greatest player in baseball for like 5 years, but it was just 5 years. Is he more deserving than somebody who was a pretty good player for 25 years? I'm curious how you come down on that,
Baines.
I would definitely, when I think of Don Mattingly, I remember seeing Don Mattingly was playing in a minor league AA baseball, and I followed his whole career, and he was a great player. And like you said, for about 5 years, as far as the stats wise and everything, he stands out. But then if we're going to go and say that, I would say, what about Ryan Howard? Because for about 4 or 5 years, and you look at Ryan Howard and compare him with Pujols and the guys that was in the National League. I didn't get to see the American League that year, but at the same time, too, Ryan Howard's stats stands out way out above most guys nowadays that win an MVP.
Yeah.
I mean, he knocked in from 100 to 150 runs. I mean, that's for four years, something like that. Four for sure, I think.
Yeah, he was incredible for that 05 to 2011 stretch. He was just incredible.
Right. So, you know, I guess that will always be an argument how you look at it. I think that's baseball, and I think fans and the media especially, they look at guys they think is special. You probably got a lot more guys on the list that I like, that I saw play their whole career. And when I see the guys that go in, and I kind of compare them, because I love baseball, I compare them to the guys that don't get in. And I wonder about that, yes. I mean, I definitely have my thoughts about it, but that's my opinion. And, of course, everyone else has an opinion, and the people that has the vote, you know, like, they're the one that puts them in there.
They are. Charlie, it is always such a pleasure just to hear your voice and talk baseball with you. It on a dreary December day, there's not much more fun than hearing you talk baseball. And Charlie, as we said, is involved in this collaborative project, Charlie Knows Best, with Hog Island T-shirts. $5 from every purchase benefits RIP Medical Debt, a national nonprofit to help strengthen communities by abolishing burdensome medical debt. Every $100 donated relieves $10,000 in medical debt. These great T-shirts will be on sale this coming Wednesday night at the Sports Holiday Gift Extravaganza at Puddler's Kitchen and Tap, 3 DeKalb Street in Bridgeport, from 6:30 to 8:30. And, hey, we're delighted to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm gonna tell you something. We will have some more T-shirts coming. As far as, you know, like, I think we got 5 or 6 out right now or something. But we definitely will have some more coming. And I'm happy because it's doing good. It's going well. And any way that I could be a help to someone who needs it, and especially who's gone through a lot of medical difficulties, you know, like, I'm willing to do that. And I want to give back to the game that, you know, like, that I love so much and things like that. And it's all good.
And you're a good man.
Before we leave, I'd like to say, I do think the Phillies are going to improve their team. I can say that. And I think that we're going to improve our team. And some of the things that we talk about, I think that management's the one that should be able to announce them or make their decision and you know, like and actually get it out to the public, the media.
Good
and
things
that's
coming.
How I feel about that. Yeah,
should be. Yeah, we're looking forward to the winter meetings. Charlie, a pleasure. Yeah. Thank you so much as always.
Always hitting season when we're talking with Charlie. Thanks, Chuck.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
Take care. I just love hearing his voice.
It's great.
Really,
you know, there's a much longer discussion to be had. He what he was talking about hitting wise with respect to the shift was almost more aesthetic. Like Ryan Howard may get more hits if there weren't a shift because the second baseman wasn't playing in short right field. But in Charlie's mind, he'd still be rolling over on an outside fastball, and that's not the proper way for him to be hitting. I love that.
He's the best. Nobody knows hitting better than him. Anyway, pleasure to talk to him, and the effort that he's involved in is terrific, and we're excited that we'll have the opportunity to sell some of those this coming week. 215-592-9494. We will get you in the next segment. We got what we're watching coming up.
You
and I watched the same documentary series. We'll see if we agree on how much we liked it or didn't. 215-592-9494. Hey, when you bring up banking, most business people, they roll their eyes. I get it. I can tell you, though, that Meridian Bank customers, they don't feel that way. Now, sure, Meridian business bankers, they do the loan thing, and they offer guidance on making your business more successful. I've used them. But Meridian also puts on great customer events, both educational and social, and they're a super group of people to be around. If you want to put some fun in your business banking, get started at meridianbanker.com.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Hi, my name is Lloyd Lockridge, and I'm the host of a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. In this podcast, I'm going to have people on to tell unusual and sometimes far-fetched stories about their families.
I've heard my whole life that she invented the margarita.
And then we're going to investigate those stories and find out how much of it is true.
He gets a patent 1 month before the Wright brothers. Oh my God.
Please follow and listen to Family Lore, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
All right, what we're watching, sponsored by Guided Door and Window. Receive 20% off all windows and doors with no money down. Up to 3 years to pay it off. Interest-free, call Guided Door and Window today. 1-877-GO-GUIDA or visit them at goguida.com. All right, go back to 1996. Pepsi versus Coke. Coke campaigns were basically, as they say in this show, selling to your grandfather with animated bears. Pepsi aiming for the new generation. They got Michael Jackson. They got Mike Tyson. They got Cindy Crawford. They're gaining ground in the cola wars. And then, Mike, they come up with a campaign called Pepsi Stuff, wherein drinkers redeem bottle caps and labels for swag and it's customer rewards program, very popular today. And Pepsi launches it with an ad. By the way, I didn't say the name of the four-part documentary on Netflix called Pepsi Where's My Jet?
Yes, kind of a play on the movie Dude, Where's My Car, which is memorable only because the title was so dumb.
I never made that connection.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what they were going
probably
for.
Probably right. There you go. Pepsi Where's My Jet on Netflix, four-part documentary. Pepsi launches this campaign with an ad that, got them in some trouble.
You there, Glenn?
Sounds like you lost Glenn.
Oh, no. Okay. So to pick up where Glenn left off, Pepsi launches this campaign where people who drink Pepsi can accumulate Pepsi points, and they can turn those points in for apparel or, you know, anything they want with Pepsi on it. And they launch a commercial during which, at the end, in the last closing seconds of the commercial, they say that if you have 7 million Pepsi points, you can turn them in and get a Harrier jet. So the mistake that Pepsi makes is that they don't put any disclaimer, any fine print on the end of this television commercial to say, hey, this is just a joke. Well, a young man, a college student named John Leonard in Seattle, decides he's going to try to get 7 million Pepsi points and get this Harrier jet. And he enlists a friend of his, a guy named Todd Hoffman, who's wealthy and an investor, and the two of them had become friends because they were both into extreme sports and mountain climbing, things like that. And they basically challenge Pepsi to deliver them a Harrier jet if they get to 7 million Pepsi points. And the whole situation blows up to the point where it involves the involvement of an attorney that some of you may have heard of in the last 6 or 7 years named Michael Avenatti, who became involved with the Trump administration and Stormy Daniels and all kinds of crazy things. But the series itself kind of tracks this situation and what comes of it. And, you know, we're hoping to get Glenn back on here in a second.
Yeah, working on it.
Okay, to get his thoughts. My feeling was that this was supposed to be a kind of David and Goliath series. You are supposed to root for John Leonard to kind of take down Pepsi and show the danger and the perils of false advertising and how a billion-dollar company can make a mistake and be taken down by kind of a gadfly, a college kid who is holding that company accountable for what it says. But I saw this more as an underdog story without an underdog, because to me, it's obvious that what Pepsi was saying was a joke. Yes, they messed up in not providing the fine print and the disclaimer and all that, but what it led to really was kind of a nuisance lawsuit. And so you're watching this series and you're set up to try to root for John Leonard. But the fact is, I found it really hard to root for John Leonard because he just became somebody who created what became kind of a remarkable situation out of a nuisance lawsuit. And I didn't feel a whole lot of sympathy for him. I didn't feel a whole lot of like, yeah, stick it to the man here. Like, you're going after a soda company. Okay. So I give it 2 stars out of 4. I think it kind of misses the mark. It's cool at the beginning. I was into the series in the beginning because of the nostalgia for 90s culture. As Glenn said, you see Cindy Crawford, you see Shaquille O'Neal when he's playing for the Orlando Magic. It takes you back to that time of the loud clothes and the way that TV commercials really could have an impact on culture and the way that they drew on pop culture to sell products. And it's fun to think back to that time as someone who was in college at that time, kind of the same age John Leonard is. But in the end, I came away from this saying that this was just a goof that turned into something way beyond that. And I didn't feel a whole lot of like rooting for John Leonard and his group of people to try to get Pepsi to give him a Harrier jet. Like, dude, you knew what they were trying to, you knew what they were doing. You knew this was a joke, you know, and you took it to the nth degree. And it's a guy like John Leonard who forces companies to put that fine print in there so that they can avoid stupid lawsuits like the one he filed.
So that's what I was going to say. So this kind of seems like it sort of set the precedent for every, you know, major company just be like, well, let's double check that we put this clause in this and this clause in that. Wasn't there something similar going on with like McDonald's and like the hot coffee where some lady spilled coffee all over herself and she was able to sue them because it didn't say caution hot or something like that?
Yeah, so, yeah. That, I mean, that was kind of a apocryphal story. I wonder what the details of that were actually like, whether she actually did have grounds. But yeah, that was cited as, of course the coffee's hot. How can you sue for hot coffee, you know, for McDonald's serving you hot coffee? But, you know, this show, based on kind of John Leonard's tete-a-tete with Pepsi, I think it was trying to become and show something that it that it ultimately kind of fails. I really can't recommend that you watch the show, as nostalgic as I was about it.
I saw it on, I think it was one of the top, one of those top 10 on Netflix things, and I was interested in seeing what it was. Mm-hmm. So I'll check that out. I think we're still working on getting Glenn back. I think it's probably going to be something that we have to do during the break.
Okay.
So if you want to toss it to break.
Yeah, why don't we do that? We'll take a break. Hopefully Glenn will be able to get his equipment reconfigured while he's at home. Again, I'm here in the studio. Glenn is at home in Haverford. So we'll go to a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about CJ Gardner-Johnson. We've got the Cooper Doc segment coming up. Ray Dittinger coming up at noon. This is Mike Sielski. This will hopefully be Glenn Mack now on 94 WIP.
Hey, I'm back, actually, and fall is upon us. So it's that time of year, again, to reconsider replacing your old drafting windows and doors before another cold winter season rolls in. And when I need a company to help me with these home projects, I turn to the experts, the great people at Guided Door and Window. Act now. Receive 20% off all windows and doors, plus Guided will allow you to start your project today with no money out of pocket and take up to 3 years to pay it off interest-free once the job is expertly installed. So you'll be able to start enjoying all the benefits of new, highly energy-efficient windows and doors, including an increased comfort level of your home and lower monthly energy bills, all while taking advantage of 20% savings and have the luxury of paying it off interest-free, 0% interest for up to 36 months. But you got to act now. Offers for a limited time only. Restrictions apply. For full details, call Guided today. Schedule a free, no-obligation in-home estimate at 1-877-GO-GUIDA or visit them at goguida.com. That's go, G-U-I-D. All right, I'm back. Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great, Glenn. You vanished there for a minute. I'm glad you're back.
Yeah. I'm talking about this show, this documentary, and all of a sudden, like, you weren't responding. I'm thinking, boy, you must have really hated it. And I realize I'm talking to myself. Anyway, my TV, where I have the World Cup game on, just flashed that they're going through a house update. So.
Wow.
Everything went out, and there you go. But now we're back. Real quick, I want to get to a couple of callers, but my bottom line on the show is I give it – how did you rank it?
2 stars out of 4.
I give it 3. I think I liked it better than you.
Okay.
I know that you said you felt it kind of petered out at the end and a little too much Michael Avenatti for all of our taste.
Yes.
But overall, it is whatever, 2.5 hours I'm glad I invested.
Okay. That's fair.
I did not, and this was the question I was asking when I disappeared, because you didn't answer, or you probably did, but I don't know if you heard the question. That case got a lot of attention at the time, right? And Dan Rather's calling this guy, and he's on every show and talk show and Oprah News and so on. For the life of me, I don't remember at all. Do you remember it?
Not even a little bit. Not at all do I remember that. Now, maybe it was, you know, we're at the stages of our lives at that time where it just wouldn't have registered. You know, I was in college and maybe I was paying attention to other things, but I had no memory of it at all.
Fascinating case.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Like I said, I just felt like it was, I didn't have as much sympathy and viewing of John Leonard as an underdog as I think that the series wanted you to have.
Yeah, I got it. All right. Before we go to our doctor, let's fire up what happened in the last Eagles game.
Rodgers back, stepping up, lets it fly, and it is complete, but there's a penalty flag thrown. They had good pressure on Aaron Rodgers, but he put it right there, and there's an Eagle shaking up.
Yeah, C.J. Gardner-Johnson appears to be in a lot of pain, and he's the guy that's down on the field on about the 12-yard line.
43.
Gardner-Johnson puts the hit on, but then he's the guy that ends up hurt.
Well, that's Marilyn Mike, and indeed he was her. Dr. Mark Pollard joins us, our friend from Cooper Bone and Joint. Look forward to talking to him every Saturday at this time. So, Doc, C.J. Gardner-Johnson suffered a lacerated kidney, which just sounds awful. The injury is not going to require surgery. He is expected to return this year. What surprised me is he didn't break a rib, and I didn't know that you could lacerate a kidney without being stabbed or whatever, you know, hit by your own rib. How does a lacerated kidney occur?
Well, you know, you're right. The kidney is pretty well protected, you know, in the middle of your back. It's kind of where it is anatomically. It's pretty much halfway sheltered by the lower edge of the rib cage, but half of it is not. And so You know, it's kind of held in place by some of the connective tissue. But if you're hit with enough force in the right place, you know, the kidney can be pulled, you know, against some of its tethering tissue, or it can physically get pushed up against the rib or something like that. And that can cause, you know, a tear in the tissue, bruise, or, you know, some other type of injury like that, which presumably is what happened in this case.
So, doctor, when we discuss common sports injuries, often we frame them in terms of, okay, what does the athlete have to do to rehabilitate the injury? How long is the treatment? Is he working out each day in rehab and things like that? What does someone do with a lacerated kidney? Is there anything that C.J. Gardner-Johnson can do to facilitate his recovery?
Really, it's just letting it heal. There's nothing, you know, specifically to do for it other than not injuring it, you know, any further or again. You know, it's just like any other, you know, lacerated tissue. You know, the ends have to be close enough together that they can mend it to themselves without, you know, disrupting that process. You know, that's how you're going to get through this most quickly.
When he comes back eventually, is it wise to protect it after that? Do you expect he'll wear a flak jacket or any additional padding, or it's just once it's healed, it's healed?
Yeah, I mean, I would assume that they would try to take extra precautions. Obviously, by the very nature of the game, you can't 100% protect it. But, you know, it's difficult to ascertain, you know, when there's no risk, when there's, you know, a lot of risk. So hopefully, you know, they would get, you know, follow-up exams and scans and try to track the progress of it and wait till it's safe and take whatever measures they can.
Now,
go ahead.
I was just going to ask, doctor, without getting too graphic, what is CJ dealing with right now in terms of this injury? What is it causing him?
Well, the big thing is pain, obviously, and I think we saw that on TV the other day. It can be a very painful injury. Obviously, it's a trauma. This is the kind of thing you see in, you know, car accidents and motorcycle accidents. So pain first, and then, you know, the kidney is part of your urinary system, and so one symptom that people often get is actually urinating blood. And so in the early going, you might have dealt a little bit with that. So pain and peeing lead.
Well, the two things best avoided.
I'm so glad I asked that question.
Yeah, thanks. Dr. Well, listen, we asked, you answer. Dr. Mark Pollard, we always appreciate your expertise. Have a great weekend, man.
All right, thanks. Appreciate you.
All right, thank you very much. Yes, I think when Zach Ertz injured himself, had a similar injury a couple of years ago, it was during the playoffs, mm-hmm. I think Ertz said he discovered the injury when, after the game, he peed and it
yes.
came out red. So
yeah, that's right.
That's got to be a scary thing.
Yeah, not good.
All right, let's get some callers in here. Mike from Elmira, New York. That's my old neck of the woods. Hey, Nick.
Get out of town.
Yeah.
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right.
I just wanted to say that I was at that Buffalo Eagles game in 1990.
Wow.
And
gosh.
I had seats at the 5-yard line. And when Cunningham goes back to pass, everybody in that stadium could see that Bruce Smith had a clear shot and was about to decapitate him. And you can hear it on Van Miller's call when he says that, you
yes.
know, they got him.
Yes.
Well, then he turns around and obviously throws the pass to Barnett and goes for a touchdown. Meanwhile, I'm the only person in the stands standing and pointing, yelling, go, 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 go. And then about 1,000 Bills fans start pointing at me and calling me an a-hole.
Oh.
Did they pelt you with chicken wings or anything like
that?
No,
he did not.
Okay.
But I sat down rather quickly.
That's great. You know what? You saw one of the all-time highlights.
Oh, it was great. It was
all right.
Yeah,
good
except
stuff.
For them losing the game, but
yes,
it was
well,
a great play.
That too. All right, Mike. Thanks a ton.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. There you go.
That's a brave soul right there, because Buffalo fans are passionate.
Yeah, but they're
but they're generally congenial. Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
They won't break a table over you.
All right. Well, that's good.
They'll just do that themselves. Our friend Mitchie from Center City. How are you doing, bud?
Doing really good, right?
Mitch. Hey, Mitch is making a sale in the hardware store. Mitch,
yeah.
Are you with us?
Yeah.
We'll put Mitch on hold.
Yeah, ringing the cash register there.
Yeah, so Mitch owns a hardware store
mm-hmm.
down in South Philadelphia, so he gets involved. So I may want to play one other thing. Kyle, I think we have the sound of John Clark with Malcolm Jenkins. We got that? Okay. So Malcolm Jenkins, our old mm-hmm. friend, great Eagles safety, was on with John Clark this week on John's Takeoff podcast, which is an excellent podcast.
Yes.
And this was before the C.J. Johnson injury. But John kind of asks him, and I don't know if John's got just kind of tongue-in-cheek, but let's play this.
Well, I think, you know, it's obviously something I would entertain, but a lot of that is out of my control. So it's not that simple, not because I'm not a free agent or anything like that. But, I mean, you know, it's obviously exciting times in Philly. And like you said, I'm in shape. I'm not against it, but some things had to fall in line for something like that to happen, and those things hadn't gotten in motion at all.
Okay, what John asked him is, would you be ready to come back to the Eagles if they made the call? Because they have other injuries at safety, mm-hmm. and now even more so. What's your take on this?
My take is that the Eagles, I love Malcolm Jenkins. He was one of my favorite guys to cover when he was with the team. Boy, they'd have to go through some other options before calling Malcolm, I would say. Wouldn't you? I mean, he's been away from it for a while, and that position requires sharpness and speed, and
yes.
You know, he has all the intelligence to do it, but man, I would wonder about everything else.
Right, and he is not a free agent. His rights are still owned by New Orleans, so you'd have to make a deal with them. I think not. I think Malcolm was just kind of
entertaining
it a little bit. I heard Elliot Shore Park said something I actually agreed with the other day.
Whoa, mark the moment.
It's not always the case.
I'm kidding.
Which is, the Eagles have so much leadership in the room currently, and a very good leadership structure,
mm-hmm.
that if you bring in a strong personality like Malcolm, who was a leader of the team a few years ago, he didn't say the word friction, and I don't think he meant friction, but there's a different dynamic than if you're just bringing in a guy who, you know, like, okay, we're adding this free agent. You're adding a strong personality, and you have to be careful about the chemistry of the team. I hadn't thought about that, but it's not a bad point.
Well, yes, in theory.
Oh, good. You're going to disagree with
that. Well, in practice, I don't think Malcolm is the kind of guy who, if you brought him in out of the cold, so to speak, he would be disruptive in that regard.
Disruptive. I don't think he meant more like, I don't know. Just it's a different leader, and if you bring in another leader, does it just create the potential of, confusion more than disruption?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I mean, I think, you know, go back to the 2017 team, right? There was a ton of leadership in that room. Several of the guys who were leaders on this team, guys like Jason Kelce and Brandon Graham and Lane Johnson, were leaders on that team. And you had Malcolm, and you had Torrey Smith and Chris Long. And, you know, the conflict there in that situation, such as it was, came from the fact that the guy who was the quarterback for most of that season really wasn't the leader of the team, and turned out to be kind of the divisive force in the room. And Carson Wentz, you wouldn't have that situation here with Jalen Hurts. And I don't think that bringing in Malcolm specifically would lead to that kind of confusion and dissonance and all that stuff.
All right, I think Mitch may be ready. Mitch, you with us now?
Sorry, guys.
It's all right. Big sale right there at the hardware store?
Yeah, in the rain, yeah. You got to straighten out my wreaths out there and everything.
Got it.
Glenn, I hope you feel better.
Thank you.
Boy, this offensive line, this is just, you know, unbelievable. Johnson and Kelce, they're opening these holes and blocking. I mean, this is unbelievable. I mean, Lane being back is such a big difference. My God.
It's an amazing thing. Kelce at 34 having as great a year as he's having. Johnson,
yes.
There was a stat I saw yesterday. He has not given up a sack in 800-something straight pass attempts.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know what's funny, Mitch, is I was in the locker room on Wednesday, and a couple of us were talking to Jordan Mailata.
Yeah.
And Mailata was talking about, somebody asked Jordan about the fact that he had been clocked his speed during the game on one play, and it was something like 17.1 miles per hour, and he was being asked about athleticism compared to the other members of the line, and Mailata said, you know, Lane is faster than I am, Kelce at times can be faster than I am, the line is just, it is, I think it's the best in the NFL, those guys are all so smart, so athletic. The Eagles are fortunate that they have this. I think it's the primary reason they're 10-1.
And you know what? I have to make my call. You know, I called last week. I like them again Sunday. It's going to be a tough game, but you know, we're going to do it again. I mean,
well, they're favorites. I'm not ready to make my pick.
Yeah,
I don't think they're going to go 16-1. I think this is a challenging game, but we shall see, and it will
this
be
quarterback
fun.
Is unbelievable.
He
though.
Is unbelievable. He is great. I think a lot of people liked him. I can't imagine anybody thought he was going to be as good as he is this fast. It's something to see. Let's take in one more call before the break. We got Ray Dinger coming up on the other side. Bobby in Garnet Valley's hanging in there. You want to talk about Jalen Hurts?
Hey, good morning. Thank you morning. So much for taking my call.
Oh, yeah.
I just wanted to talk just briefly on another fellow's call. I went to that same Buffalo game, and I would go travel one game a year, with the Eagles. And that was the scariest time I think I was ever at a away football game. And it wasn't the men. It was the women.
Oh, my gosh.
I swear to God. And I'm not a little guy by any means. But we walked in, and I had my Randall Cunningham jersey on. And the guys were asking us to come over to their, they were tailgating, asked us to, have food and drinks. And I said, wow, Bill, this is unbelievable. I can't believe it. Well, that sure ended real quickly because these women behind us, they use language that truck drivers don't even think.
I just want to say to you, Bobby and Mike, I dated those girls growing up. It's probably everybody I went to high school.
Well, they were sure passionate, and there was no fights at all like that. But and in fact, on my way out, a gentleman, he wanted to buy my jersey for his daughter, so I sold him my jersey. Yeah. But
hey, give us your Jalen Hurts because we got to hit a break.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, do you think if he was a few inches taller, because McNabb, he got too bulk towards the end. He couldn't even throw a pass. He was so much upper body strength and bulk. If Hurts had like 2 more inches, would that affect him, his running or something like that in any way? Or would it be beneficial to him?
Good question.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, you just add 2 inches to Jalen Hurts. I mean, maybe he can see over the line of scrimmage better, obviously. Maybe he's his arm's a little bit stronger. I don't know. It's hard to say. I think he's... The way he's wired and the way he's built right now is it all seems to be working okay. I wouldn't change anything now.
But his long passes, he's not really always catching the guy in stride. He's got to turn back a little. That split second causes a major factor. Randall is so fluent with that ball, how far he could pass it.
Yeah, but Randall didn't always hit guys in stride either. I think time can.
Thanks, Bob.
Time can change how we look at somebody. Randall was not the most accurate passer in the world.
So Hurts is 6'1", or he's listed at 6'1". I think that's pretty accurate. Have him stood next to him, I think that's about right. If he was taller, I mean, if it took away from his flexibility, his ability to run, his speed, anything else, you wouldn't want it. But one thing that happens is he does get balls batted back. Mm-hmm. He is not tall in the pocket because he's not tall. So, if he was 6'3", 6'4", and the same guy, it would be that much better. But
I'll
take what we got.
Yeah, and often balls getting batted down is a function as much of the quarterback and the lanes that he has to throw and that he doesn't see to throw. Drew Brees, for instance, didn't get a lot of balls batted down.
No, he was great at it. He was a short guy.
Yep.
215-592-9494 coming up. Our pal Ray Dinger. We're going to talk with Ray. Mike Sielski, Glenn Mack now on 94 WIP.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer,
SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
All right, I'm back. Hey, Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great, Glenn. You vanished there for a minute. I'm glad you're back.
Yeah. I'm talking about this show, this documentary, and all of a sudden, like, you weren't responding. I'm thinking, boy, you must have really hated it. And I realize I'm talking to myself. Anyway, my TV, where I have the World Cup game on, just flashed that they're going through a house update. So Everything went out, and there you go. But now we're back. Real quick, I want to get to a couple of callers, but my bottom line on the show is I give it, how did you rank it?
2 stars out of 4.
I give it 3. I think I liked it better than you. Okay. I know that you said you felt it kind of petered out at the end and a little too much Michael Avenatti for all of our taste.
Yes.
But overall, it is 2.5 hours I'm glad I invested.
Okay. That's fair.
I did not, and this was the question I was asking when I disappeared, because you didn't answer. Or you probably did, but I don't know if you heard the question. That case got a lot of attention at the time, right? And Dan Rather's calling this guy, and he's on every show and talk show and Oprah News and so on. For the life of me, I don't remember at all. Do you remember it?
Not even a little bit. Not at all do I remember that. Now, maybe it was, you know, we're at the stages of our lives at that time where it just wouldn't have registered. You know, I was in college, and maybe I was paying attention to other things, but I had no memory of it at all.
Fascinating case.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Like I said, I just felt like it was, I didn't have as much sympathy and viewing of John Leonard as an underdog as I think that the series wanted you to have.
Yeah, I got it. All right. Before we go to our doctor, let's fire up what happened in the last Eagles game.
Rodgers back, stepping up, lets it fly, and it is complete, but there's a penalty flag thrown. They had good pressure on Aaron Rodgers, but he put it right there, and there's an Eagle shaken up.
Yeah, C.J. Gardner-Johnson appears to be in a lot of pain, and he's the guy that's down on the field on about the 12-yard line.
43.
Gardner-Johnson puts the hit on, but then he's the guy that ends up hurt.
Well, that's Marilyn Mike, and indeed he was her. Dr. Mark Pollard joins us, our friend from Cooper Bone and Joint. Look forward to talking to him every Saturday at this time. So, Doc, C.J. Gardner-Johnson suffered a lacerated kidney, which just sounds awful. The injury is not going to require surgery. He is expected to return this year. What surprised me is he didn't break a rib, and I didn't know that you could lacerate a kidney without being stabbed or whatever, you know, hit by your own rib. How does a lacerated kidney occur?
Well, you know, you're right. The kidney is pretty well protected, you know, in the middle of your back. It's kind of where it is anatomically. It's pretty much halfway sheltered by the lower edge of the rib cage, but half of it is not. And so, you know, it's kind of held in place by some of the connective tissue. But if you're hit with enough force in the right place, you know, the kidney can be pulled, you know, against some of its tethering tissue, or it can physically get pushed up against the rib or something like that. And that can cause, you know, a tear in the tissue, bruise, or, you know, some other type of injury like that, which presumably is what happened in this case.
So, doctor, when we discuss common sports injuries, often we frame them in terms of, okay, what does the athlete have to do to rehabilitate the injury? How long is the treatment? Is he working out each day in rehab and things like that? What does someone do with a lacerated kidney? Is there anything that C.J. Gardner-Johnson can do to facilitate his recovery?
Really, it's just letting it heal. There's nothing, you know, specifically to do for it other than not injuring it, you know, any further or again. You know, it's just like any other, you know, lacerated tissue. You know, the ends have to be close enough together that they can mend it to themselves without, you know, disrupting that process. You know, that's how you're going to get through this most quickly.
When he comes back eventually, is it wise to protect it after that? Do you expect he'll wear a flak jacket or any additional padding, or it's just once it's healed, it's healed?
Yeah, I mean, I would assume that they would try to take extra precautions. Obviously, by the very nature of the game, you can't 100% protect it. But, you know, it's difficult to ascertain, you know, when there's no risk, when there's, you know, a lot of risk. So hopefully, you know, they would get you know, follow up exams and scans and try to track the progress of it and wait till it's safe and take whatever measures they can.
Now,
go ahead.
I was just going to ask, Doctor, without getting too graphic, what is CJ dealing with right now in terms of this injury? What is it causing him?
Well, the big thing is pain, obviously, and I think we saw that on TV the other day. It can be a very painful injury. Obviously, it's a trauma. This is the kind of thing you see in, you know, car accidents and motorcycle accidents. So pain first, and then, you know, the kidney is part of your urinary system. And so one symptom that people often get is actually urinating blood. And so in the early going, you might have dealt a little bit with that. So pain and peeing lead.
Well, the two things best avoided.
I'm so glad I asked that question.
Yeah, thanks. Dr. Well, listen, we asked, you answer. Dr. Mark Pollard, we always appreciate your expertise. Have a great weekend, man.
All right, thanks. Appreciate you.
All right, thank you very much. Yes, I think when Zach Ertz injured himself, had a similar injury a couple of years ago, it was during the playoffs, mm-hmm. I think Ertz said he discovered the injury when, after the game, he peed and it
yes.
came out red. So
yeah, that's right.
That's got to be a scary thing.
Yeah, not good.
All right, let's get some callers in here. Mike from Elmira, New York. That's my old neck of the woods. Hey, Nick.
Get out of town.
Yeah.
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right.
I just wanted to say that I was at that Buffalo Eagles game in 1990.
Wow.
And
I
had seats at the 5-yard line. And when Cunningham goes back to pass, everybody in that stadium could see that Bruce Smith had a clear shot and was about to decapitate him. And you can hear it on Van Miller's call when he says that, you
yes.
know, they got him.
Yes.
Well, then he turns around and obviously throws the pass to Barnett and goes for a touchdown. Meanwhile, I'm the only person in the stands standing and pointing, yelling, go, 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 go. And then about 1,000 Bills fans start pointing at me and calling me an a-hole.
Oh.
Did they pelt you with chicken wings or anything like
no,
that?
No, he did not.
Okay.
But I sat down rather quickly.
That's great. You know what? You saw one of the all-time highlights.
Oh, it was great. It was
all right.
Yeah,
good
except
stuff.
For them losing the game, but
yes,
it was
well,
a great play.
That too. All right, Mike. Thanks a ton.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. There you go.
That's a brave soul right there, because Buffalo fans are passionate.
Yeah, but they're
but they're generally congenial. Is that what you're saying?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
They won't break a table over you.
All right. Well, that's good.
They'll just do that themselves. Our friend Mitchie from Center City. How are you doing, bud?
Doing really good, right?
Mitch. Hey, Mitch is making a sale in the hardware store. Mitch,
yeah.
are you with us?
Yeah.
We'll put Mitch on hold.
Yeah, ringing the cash register there.
Yeah, so Mitch owns a hardware store
mm-hmm.
down in South Philadelphia, so he gets involved. So I may want to play one other thing. Kyle, I think we have the sound of John Clark with Malcolm Jenkins. We got that? Okay. So Malcolm Jenkins, our old mm-hmm. friend, great Eagles safety, was on with John Clark this week on John's Takeoff podcast, which is an excellent podcast.
Yes.
And this was before the C.J. Johnson injury. But John kind of asks him, and I don't know if John's got just kind of tongue-in-cheek, but let's play this.
Well, I think, you know, it's obviously something I would entertain, but a lot of that is out of my control. So it's not that simple, not because I'm not a free agent or anything like that. But, I mean, you know, it's obviously exciting times in Philly. And like you said, I'm in shape. I'm not against it, but some things had to fall in line for something like that to happen, and those things hadn't gotten in motion at all.
Okay, what John asked him is, would you be ready to come back to the Eagles if they made the call? Because they have other injuries at safety,
mm-hmm.
and now even more so. What's your take on this?
My take is that the Eagles, I love Malcolm Jenkins. He was one of my favorite guys to cover when he was with the team. Boy, they'd have to go through some other options before calling Malcolm, I would say. Wouldn't you? I mean, he's been away from it for a while, and that position requires sharpness and speed, and
yes.
you know, he has all the intelligence to do it, but man, I would wonder about everything else.
Right, and he is not a free agent. His
right.
rights are still owned by New Orleans, so you'd have to make a deal with them. Yeah, I think not. I think Malcolm was just kind of
he's playing
fun,
around,
entertaining
yeah.
it a little bit. I heard Elliot Shore Park said something I actually agreed with the other day.
Whoa, mark the moment.
It's not always the case.
I'm kidding.
Which is, the Eagles have so much leadership in the room currently, and a very good leadership structure,
mm-hmm.
that if you bring in a strong personality like Malcolm, who was a leader of the team a few years ago, it may, he didn't say the word friction, and I don't think he meant friction, but there's a different dynamic than if you're just bringing in a guy who, you know, like, okay, we're adding this free agent. You're adding a strong personality, and you have to be careful about the chemistry of the team. I hadn't thought about that, but it's not a bad point.
Well, I yes, in theory.
Oh, good. You're going to disagree with
that. Well, in practice, I don't think Malcolm is the kind of guy who, if you brought him in out of the cold, so to speak, he would be disruptive in that regard.
Not disruptive. I don't think he meant more like, I don't know. Just it's a different leader, and if you bring in another leader, does it just create the potential of, I don't want to use, I'm trying to think of the word I want to use, confusion more than disruption.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I mean, I think, you know, go back to the 2017 team, right? There was a ton of leadership in that room. Several of the guys who were leaders on this team, guys like Jason Kelce and Brandon Graham and Lane Johnson, were leaders on that team. And you had Malcolm and you had Torrey Smith and Chris Long. And, you know, the conflict there in that situation, such as it was, came from the fact that the guy who was the quarterback for most of that season really wasn't the leader of the team and turned out to be kind of the divisive force in the room. And Carson Wentz, you wouldn't have that situation here with Jalen Hurts. And I don't think that bringing in Malcolm specifically would lead to that kind of confusion and dissonance and all that stuff.
All right, I think Mitch may be ready. Mitch, you with us now?
Sorry, guys.
It's all right. Big sale right there at the hardware store?
Yeah, in the rain, yeah. You got to straighten out my wreaths out there and everything. Glenn, I hope you feel better.
Thank you.
Boy, this offensive line, this is just, you know, unbelievable. Johnson and Kelce, they're opening these holes and blocking. I mean, this is unbelievable. I mean, Lane being back is such a big difference. My God.
It's an amazing thing. Kelce at 34 having as great a year as he's having. Johnson,
yes.
There was a stat I saw yesterday. He has not given up a sack in 800-something straight pass attempts.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know what's funny, Mitch, is I was in the locker room on Wednesday, and a couple of us were talking to Jordan Mailata.
Yeah.
And Mailata was talking about, somebody asked Jordan about the fact that he had been clocked his speed during the game on one play, and it was something like 17.1 miles per hour, and he was being asked about athleticism compared to the other members of the line, and Mailata said, you know, Lane is faster than I am, Kelce at times can be faster than I am, the line is just, it is, I think it's the best in the NFL, those guys
are
smart, so athletic. The Eagles are fortunate that they have this. I think it's the primary reason they're 10-1.
And you know what? I have to make my call. You know, I called last week. I like them again Sunday. It's going to be a tough game, but you know, we're going to do it again. I mean,
well, they're favorites. I'm not ready to make my pick. I don't think they're going to go 16-1. I think this is a challenging game, but we shall see, and it will
this
be
quarterback
fun.
Is unbelievable.
He is unbelievable. He is great. I think a lot of people liked him. I can't imagine anybody thought he was going to be as good as he is this fast. It's something to see. Let's sneak in one more call before the break. We got Ray Dinger coming up on the other side. Bobby in Garnet Valley's hanging in there. You want to talk about Jalen Hurts?
Hey, Glenn, good morning. Thank you
morning.
So much for taking my call.
Oh, yeah.
I just wanted to talk just briefly on another fellow's call. I went to that same Buffalo game, and I would go travel one game a year, you know, with the Eagles. And that was the scariest time I think I was ever at a away football game. And it wasn't the men. It was the women.
Oh, my gosh.
I swear to God. And I'm not a little guy by any means. But we walked in, and I had my Randall Cunningham jersey on. And the guys were asking us to come over to their, you know, they were tailgating, asked us to, you know, have food and drinks. And I said, wow, Bill, this is unbelievable. I can't believe it. Well, that sure ended real quickly because these women behind us, they use language that truck drivers don't even think.
I just want to say to you, Bobby and Mike, I dated those girls growing up. It's probably everybody I went to high school.
Well, they were sure passionate, and there was no fights at all like that. But and in fact, on my way out, a gentleman he wanted to buy my jersey for his daughter, so I sold him my jersey.
Hey, give us your Jalen Hurts because we got to hit a break.
Yep.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Do you think if he was a few inches taller, because McNabb, he got too bulk towards the end. He couldn't even throw a pass. He was so much upper body strength and bulk. If Hurst had like 2 more inches, would that affect him, his running or something like that in any way, or would it be beneficial to him?
Good question.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you just add 2 inches to Jalen Hurts. I mean, maybe he can see over the line of scrimmage better, obviously. Maybe he's his arm's a little bit stronger. I don't know. It's hard to say. I think he's the way he's wired and the way he's built right now, is it all seems to be working okay. You know, I wouldn't change anything
pass,
now.
But his long passes, he's not really always catching the guy in stride. He's got to turn back a little. You know, that split second causes a major, major factor. Randall is so fluent with that ball, how far he could pass it.
Yeah, but Randall didn't always hit guys in stride either. I think, time can...
Thanks, Bob.
Time can change how we look at somebody. Randall was not the most accurate passer in the world.
So Hurts is 6'1", or he's listed at 6'1". I think that's pretty accurate. Have him stood next to him, I think that's about right. If he was taller, I mean, if it took away from his flexibility, his ability to run, his speed, anything else, you wouldn't want it. But one thing that happens is he does get balls batted back. Mm-hmm. He is not tall in the pocket because he's not tall. So, yeah, if he was 6'3", 6'4", and the same guy, it would be that much better, but...
Yeah, and often
I'll take what we got.
Yeah, and often balls getting batted down is a function as much of the quarterback and the lanes that he has to throw and that he doesn't see to throw. You know, Drew Brees, for instance, didn't get a lot of balls batted down.
No, he was great at it. He was a short guy.
Yep.
215-592-9494 coming up. Our pal Ray Dinger. We're going to talk with Ray. Mike Sielski, Glenn Mack, now on 94 WIP.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.